Thanks for listening to The Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans proudly supports the Adam Carolla Show. So when you're choosing a mortgage lender, work with someone you can trust. Rocket Mortgage. They are transparent and they have an online process that gives you confidence to make an informed decision. Don't waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. Securely share your financial info for a mortgage and get approval in just minutes. It's Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to be sure you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. So whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, skip the bank, skip the waiting, do it completely online at quickenloans.com/Adam. That's quickenloans.com/Adam. Dawson.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Hi, I'm Howard Mackler, one of the founders of RichUncles.com, real estate investing for everyone. Our $1 billion offering is now open for investment with a $500 minimum. RichUncles NNN REIT is a public non-listed REIT, a real estate investment trust that invests in single-tenant commercial real estate. Learn more by reading our prospectus at RichUncles.com. That's RichUncles.com or call 855-RICH-UNCLES.
This media outlet is being paid under $2,000 by RichUncles for this single message and is intended only for residents in states where the offering is approved.
RichUncles.com or call 855-RICH-UNCLES.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Mick Garris, with Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, plus a round of Hooray for Baldywood, Train Spotting 2. And now, Dark Lady, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Welcome to the show. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. I like to see those ratings go up every week, and it's because you guys are sharing with other people. So thanks for that. Good day, Gina Grant.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
It's not labia, it's labia.
Oh, yeah. We got the Leonard Skinner controversy going on.
So much pronunciation.
It's really heating up.
Well, I got, so there was a...
Who knew 45 years after the fact we did?
Now, I always said Leonard Skinner like Leonard Cohen or Leonard Nimoy.
Right.
That's what I always heard.
And that's the way I heard it, and that's why I said it. Then I started getting
tweets. I'm the
one
to pronounce my favorite actor, Michael Biehn, Michael Bane, for about 20 years, so...
That's unforgivable.
I may have been wrong.
And I started getting tweets going, here's how you pronounce it. And it was like an L and an E and a Y with an umlaut or something over the Y. Yeah. But here's the thing with me. If you start putting upside down moons over letters, that's not going to help me at all because I don't know what that means I'm supposed to do with the letter. You did not add any clarity.
Yeah, by showing
it.
You know German doesn't help you understand it.
Right. So what was the official tweet I was getting? Still looked like Leonard Skinner, but... With the weird thing over the E, now I don't know.
It means it's a soft E and it's pronounced Le.
Yeah.
Right. Leonard.
It's phonetic. We should back up half a step and say this is from their debut album. Debut album is actually titled Leonard Skinner, pronounced Leonard Skinner.
Right.
But the crazy thing about it is it's spelled L-Y-N-Y-R-D, S-K-Y-N-Y-R-D. Y is the only vowel in both words, so why would they be pronounced differently?
I think they're stylized.
And as KG, classic rock veterans that I work with all day, I have never heard one of them say Leonard Skinner.
I've only heard Leonard Skinner in classic rock.
Never any other way.
I'm not saying you're lying. I'm just saying we've heard the exact opposite.
This is news to me.
Here's my question to just kind of button up this point. Where is Ozzy from?
Ozzy?
Nicaragua?
I was thinking of Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's not Nicaragua?
Nicaragua.
What was? Right. Hold on there.
I don't know.
Easy.
Did we button this up?
The people in the South may pronounce it Lynyrd Skynyrd. Because they're from the South.
Yes. Yeah.
But we're not.
A redneck tweeted me that.
We don't order chicken. We order chicken.
Thank you.
And scene.
We're saying chicken two different ways.
Feels buttoned up.
We buttoned it up, but I think we got the wrong button in the wrong hole in our shirt sideways.
That's fine. I know. You love to just disagree with me all the time.
No, I'm not disagreeing. I don't feel buttoned up.
You guys are agreeing in the best way possible.
I don't write or spell or read. So when I heard Lynyrd Skynyrd or Leonard Nimoy, it was always just the same Leonard to me. I never worked the Y. For all I knew, Leonard Nimoy spelt his name
Lynyrd
with a Y.
Yeah.
So that was it. And then also with names in general, you can do whatever you want with a name because you get to do it your own way.
There is a Lynn. You know, a Lynn is a name.
Sure.
So Lynyrd
is male and female.
Yep.
And to back up Dawson's point, the redneck that tweeted me was a self-identified redneck. He said, we rednecks pronounce it, you know, we're getting some chicken, you know, so it's like, or however
chicken?
I think he said chicken. I said, or chicken. Nuggets or at Wendy's. Like Wendy's instead of Wendy's.
Oh, like pen and pin.
So, you know, yeah. Leonard can become Lynyrd.
In Philly, they get a glass of water, but that's not the way we pronounce
Kansas,
it.
In Kansas, they go wash their hands. Is there anything more disgusting than that?
My father pronounces it like that, and he's Californian.
Like I said, the one that I always liked it because it was right in the title and it could toggle it both ways, which is Jimmy Kimmel's Uncle Vinny once asked if I saw the movie Hanner and Her Sisters. And I thought, that's perfect, because it's right there.
It's a floating R.
It's right in the same thing.
Yeah.
All right. So we got that cleared up.
Yep.
Also, I was just over at the other shop, and these were left behind. And I just thought to myself, do we need sweet potato fries? I don't need sweet potato fries. I feel like
they're
fries
more...
are... covered. I'm not sure what to dip a sweet potato fry in. Fry with the ketchup or fry with the barbecue sauce or fry with the ranch or even
mayonnaise.
Or whatever it is, wherever you are. If you're from where they call it Lynyrd, then you might want the mayonnaise. But don't need the sweet potato fry. Just don't need it. Just unnecessarily. It's kind of up there with the curly fry. Don't need the curly fry. Don't need the big wedge cut fry either, because now we're just in potato.
Yeah, now we're just getting more potato.
But, the sweet potato fry, I think people think it sounds good. It's not that good. It's unnecessary.
From a taste perspective, maybe we don't need it, but isn't it better on Vinny's scale?
Not once you cook it and roast it, all the sugar comes to the top. It's kind of the same thing, I think.
Oh, I always thought sweet potatoes were the healthy version of potatoes.
Only if you boil them or steam them.
Oh, really?
I think so. I don't want to speak for Vinny, but I'm pretty sure that's how that rolls.
Isn't a sweet potato just basically like a potato, but with sugar in it? I mean, not sugar, but sweeter?
That's what I thought.
It's a yam, isn't it? A sweet potato's a yam.
No, yam's a yam. Okay. Sweet potatoes. Basically,
but it's more like a yam than it is like a potato.
It is basically potato to the left, yam to the right, sweet potato lands in the middle. But the yam, that's like the black gene. You know what I mean? You get a white mom and a black dad. You think the kid's a black kid.
Okay.
He can be right. Yeah. Obama's half black, half white, but he's black.
He's got the curly hair and, yeah.
It's a dominant, the yam gene.
Elbows
is
out,
a
potato
dominant
gene.
I don't know that a sweet potato is much more. I think it's right in between with the dominant yam gene.
You're saying the yam boxes out the potato gene.
That's what I'm saying.
Finally, another hot topic to get us off of this Skynyrd stuff.
Well, I mean, Obama's half and half, but he's black.
Yep. He's more yam.
He's yam.
Yeah, the white gene, the white potato gene gets kind of muscled, gets boxed out from under the board.
Well, this has always been a very unpopular opinion, so I tend to keep it to myself. But I feel the same way about sweet potato French fries as I do about Nutella. Overrated, would never choose it.
Yeah, but a great name for a crazy black woman, as long as we're on that topic.
Oh, Nutella's got a shoe in her head, run!
And Gary, I don't know how we can figure this out, but I just would figure that sweet potatoes and potatoes would just be on Vinny's no fly zone, and they are. But is a sweet potato better?
I have a.
And then is a yam better than a sweet potato on Vinny's? you know, scale. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't
so to
everyone
speak.
Have a glycemic index app on their phone?
Oh, okay, good. So no need for the sweet potato fries, I have decided.
Superfluous.
Also, fries are already, the biggest problem with fries is how good they are and then how quickly they can go south on you. If they sit around for an hour, they
jump
just go bad.
Fries.
Sweet potatoes fries go south even faster with even greater speed. They go bad fast.
You know what? This is very local, but you just brought it up last week. Speaking of fries, you know what's the best fries? The apple pan. Apple pan does it right. They just dump the fries out, dump the ketchup out, and there's your little lump of fries and ketchup. You're going to do it once in a while. Do it at the apple pan.
Excuse me. I have breaking news.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is just from the Glycemic Index app. I'm just reporting what I'm hearing. Sweet potatoes out of 0 to 100, 100 being the most sugary. Sweet potatoes are 50. Yams are 40.
Wow. Counterintuitive, because it seems sweeter, and they are sweeter.
Yeah, I have no idea.
And then what's a regular potato?
Hold, please. Scrolling, scrolling. It is.
Are you in the root vegetable section?
Yep. In the nightshades. Here we go. Oh, there's a lot of potato categories, but just the regular old potato.
Russets.
Okay. Baked with skin.
All right.
Sure.
Well, that's 90.
Damn.
And unpeeled and boiled is 65. So once
you
bake it,
better going yam.
Yeah,
all right.
When you bake it and roast it, I guess that's when all the sugars come out.
All right,
to the top.
So maybe there is room on your plate for a sweet potato fry. Yes,
he still doesn't like
have to
him.
Like him.
I don't like him.
Don't have to like
him. But you're right. All right, went to father daughter dance.
I saw that
on, picture.
I didn't see any pictures.
Oh,
but somebody told me there was a picture, but
a sweet picture.
Had a fun time with Natalia until. She did the move with mommy where she called up and said, like, can Cammy sleep over? And Lynette was like, absolutely not. And she's like, thank you, thank you, thank you, and hung up the phone and then drove Lynette insane. So there was that working for us. But first off, it just made me feel horrible for my sister because I saw how much these daughters were enjoying out swinging around. Their dads were swinging them around and they were dancing and they were having fun and they would like they'd do the big long train hokey pokey thing and then they'd do the one with just the girls out there and the DJ doing the thing and then they'd come back and you know it was sort of a combination of the
daughters.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it would be you out there with them and then they dance by themselves for a little while and then be back out again. But they were having. Is this John Mayer?
Because of your daughters.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. Honestly, these girls, they felt great. They're having a great time. And I just start thinking about my poor sister. She's never done anything even close to this ever. Like, she never had that sense. And then I just realized, again, as I always say, all these asswipes are like, hey, there's a lot of families that socioeconomically, all free. Mm-hmm. It's just free. It's just music, and it's you, and it's dancing.
Punch.
That's it. It's the best thing. There's nothing in the Macy's catalog that will outdo this. Mm-hmm. So
no, sorry, I missed your birthday card.
You can't get them an animatronic pony, is what I'm saying, for $5,000 that will be a better memory than this.
Yep.
There's nothing better than this. The fact that we always do this thing where it's like, hey, it's a lot of these families, you know, they're unable to. Nope. It's Friday night. It's 8 o'clock. I don't care how hard you work. You're probably home by 8 o'clock on Friday night and you get dressed up and you go out. And if you're the dad, it's, you know, not the most exciting Friday night you're going to spend. But
it's quality time.
But it's quality time, and it's free. Right. Just go there. It's just free. That's it.
Now, once you got there, did you lean into it? Did you try and have a good time?
Natalia has this problem, which is she doesn't like it when I just go rogue. You know, I go freeform.
No daughters do.
I go sort of
a specific amount of fun, a specific type of fun.
Yeah, they don't like it when I go Saturday Night Fever.
Oh no!
And so she doesn't like that. Then she does this move where she likes to compete with her friend. So she likes to swing me and swing us in front of the friend and then sort of look at the friend and then do the move in front of the friend where she's not really paying attention to me. Yeah, I know.
Dance floor showdown.
It's going to be trouble. It's going to be trouble soon.
Is this a school thing? Is it a cotillion thing? What is the,
no idea.
I'm asking the wrong guy.
I have no idea.
You just showed up.
We never know.
Was it at the school?
It was at a school, but not at the school. It was at the high school. Ooh. And it was the father-daughter dance, and that's as much as I know. We can never figure out if there's going to be food there. We don't know anything. Booze. Barely know where it is. But we figure that out. One had a good time. One of the dads is an engineer, and I like talking to him about his projects because he does the big stuff, you know, the airports and all that. One thing that he's not doing, but that he knows very well, is the Rams' new stadium.
Yeah.
And I said...
Hollywood Park area?
Yeah, Hollywood Park. Inglewood, Hollywood Park, sort of the front of LAX. If anyone has flown into LAX, if you're sitting on the right side of the airplane and you look out and you look down, you'll see the old Hollywood Park or see the Forum or be out there, the racetrack,
area ripe for rejuvenation.
Yes. He said, well, the nightmare is the FAA and the height restrictions. And I was like, oh, yeah, because
those are planes pretty low.
That's the final approach. That's the glide slope. And you're on it, and you go, you look out Hollywood Park. You're not that high up off the track. So now you're going to build a major league, pardon the pun, world-class football stadium there. How many stories are you going up? And then what's that doing with the airplane? And then... so there's an FAA thing, if you want to put it there. And he said, well, the way they got around that is the football field, the surface of the football field, the top of the football field is going to be 10 stories below the ground.
Yeah, there you go.
Below grade, as we like to say in the business. Mm. 10 stories down.
Creepy.
Crazy, right?
Is that going to be a problem when it rains?
I think it like a French drain or something going in there.
Like
or something,
a shower drain.
It could be
in
an
there.
Issue. It could be a major issue.
Oh, we didn't think about this.
And I have no idea what the renderings or anything look like, but that.
We probably thought about it.
Is there an example of that anywhere else?
I don't think 10 stories down.
I'm sure
maybe
there are
dropping
some.
It down a couple of few, but not 10 stories. Yes.
You know how in Denver they can kick very, very long field goals because the air is so thin? Mm. When they go 10 stories below, I mean, it's essentially below sea level.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to be that close to the coast, is the air going to get thicker? Is it going to have is it be harder to kick a field goal?
Guys are
in LA
missing
Stadium?
20 yarders.
Yeah.
It would.
The Rams go for two every time.
It would. And with the lava factor, yes.
Yeah. Molten.
I mean, probably not because
I'm going to button this up, Dawson. Yes, it is. Because it's, look, as far as I can tell, if you guys have ever been to Badwater Basin in Death Valley in like August.
I have.
Okay. And Badwater Basin is the hottest place in North America. And I'll screw this up a little, but I mean, really pretty much on this continent and almost anywhere. We'll give parts of, the Middle East a run for their money in terms of the hottest on record. Maybe has the record or like, 129 degrees or something.
But it's called Death Valley.
Yeah, right. It's on the sign when you came in. I was there, and I was in an SUV or something, and it was reading like 126 or something like that on the thermometer, the exterior temperature. Gary, you can back me up here, but Badwater Basin in Death Valley, and Death Valley being the hottest place, again, I don't know, on this continent, North America, whatever it is, it's only like 233 feet below sea level. It's just below sea level. It's 282 below sea level, and that's enough for it to be the hottest place pretty much in the world. So things change pretty quick. It's not thousands of feet,
It's not an insane amount.
Right.
So if, Denver's at, 5,000 or 5,200 or whatever it is, above. And that's good for an extra, 16 feet, 20 feet when you boot the ball, or maybe even more when you kick the ball. I'm guessing that for every foot you go down, you lose 10 inches or 5 inches or whatever it is. And for every foot you go up, you might gain a couple inches. I'm assuming it just keeps going the same direction.
Stands to reason.
Stands to reason, Dawson.
We'll find out.
How many feet are in a story?
Ten.
Ten.
Thank you.
And you know the reason I say 10 stories? Because when you tell people it's 100 feet below the ground, they go, when you go 10 stories, they go, ooh, because they picture a 10-story
building.
Yep. Right. All right. Let's see. What else do I got here? So, yeah, thought that was kind of interesting with the Rams field. He said, and I don't know, he said there's just trucks just trucking it out, just taking dirt nonstop. I was watching Bill Maher's show on Friday, I think it was. Oh, quick update. Kong, Skull Island, out of the theater near me.
Oh.
We're ships in the night now, me and Kong. We can no longer. The Kong ship has sailed. Window's been painted shut.
A fickle mistress.
Should not be seeing that.
Show Kong enough attention, and she left.
I shall be focusing my attentions now on the Fast 8 or the Fate of the 8 or whatever.
That's a soft landing spot for you.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
So I was watching Real Time with Bill Maher on Fridays, I'm apt to do. And I like Bill because Bill's funny. And I believe him to be honest. And I agree with a lot of the stuff he says. And I disagree with a lot of stuff he says. But I have a relationship with him that I think most people should have with other humans, which is because I disagree with some of his politics, I don't want to label him a hack.
Right.
You know, I hate that. The guy's really good at what he does, and I enjoy watching his show. And then he has a panel on. I disagree with the panel most of the time, but it doesn't mean I can't enjoy the show.
Sure.
Which more people should take that approach. It's a better way to get through life.
Yeah, dismissing wholly.
But he said something in his right after the monologue where he goes into the first little one-on-one sit-down that I hope someone put a little head on, Gary, on Friday night that I thought, Bill, I think you're jumping the shark a little bit here. This was his comment. Go ahead if you haven't.
But let me read you this.
Hold on a second. I'm sorry. He's talking to Jelani Cobb, and I'm not sure what his. It's a large man of color, but
sounds like an Indian dish.
Jelani Cobb.
I believe he's a contributor for the New Yorker.
Okay, so I mean, consider he's the audience he's talking to, but
professor at Columbia as well.
Professor at Columbia, but go ahead.
But let me read you this. This is the University of Chicago does a survey. They've done it for many years on race. And 55% of white Republicans say blacks are worse off economically, which, of course, is true. I could cite the statistics. Mm-hmm. Because most just don't have the motivation or willpower to pull themselves up out of poverty. And I've always said this was the argument about affirmative action. But when you are talking about affirmative action, you have one view. This. Mm-hmm. Or there's a reason why they're behind, which might have been Jim Crow and slavery. Right. And, you know, they weren't allowed to get an education for many decades, that kind of stuff. Or this. And these, of course, I bet you almost every one of these white Republicans who says that would say, I'm not a racist.
Sure.
I believe blacks don't have the motivation to pull themselves up, but I'm not a racist.
But what do we do about that
problem?
The other part, I don't know how to fix
Hold on
racism.
A second. How much head do you want to put on this, Gary?
I'm sorry, this was 100% you and Dylan. I didn't hear this conversation.
Oh, okay.
I'm not.
All right, well, I guess we can keep playing it then, I guess. This wasn't what I was talking about, but go ahead.
It's been here for a really long time.
But this problem specifically, which is I always say the new racism is not knowing you're a racist.
Right. Well, I think there's...
Lots of applause for that one.
The new racism is not knowing you're racist. And applause.
Yeah.
All right. It makes my argument for us not being nearly as racist is everyone says we are, because if this is the new racism, if not knowing you're racist is the new racism, we're out of problems.
Yeah. I think the clownish sort of old timey, look at racism, like the Ku Klux Klan and that sort of, exaggerated, like I'm a racist and I know it. Like, I think that's probably gone away, but, not knowing, I was confused by what he was.
It should be met. Like, it shouldn't be followed with an applause. And I think, which of course, then what I'm here's the deal. But that makes everyone a potential racist.
Sure.
Everybody, because it's like Dr. Drew with warts. You can tell him, I don't have warts. And he'll go, oh, yes, you do. And
I'll but
go,
you might 100% believe you don't. Like, I've never had
just because you've never had a breakout doesn't mean you don't. You
I've
don't
never
shed,
seen a single wart
you
on my
shed
body.
The virus. You still
never,
have it.
Never seen a wart on
well,
my
hey, Warty Warterson.
Why don't you drag
your honker-laden wart mule the hell out of here?
Okay, I guess I could.
You got warts.
I don't have warts.
Who's next? What do you want, herpes or warts?
I'd like
I'll give both to you.
Those are my only two options.
Keep arguing. I'll give you both. Yeah, you tell Dr. Drew you don't have HPV, and he'll go, oh, yes, you do.
Oh,
and
wow.
You'll go,
that's fun Saturday night.
And you'll go, I've never had a wart. And he'll go, doesn't mean anything.
Well, I got
him. You still got it. In which case, I guess we could all have, if dorsal fins work the same, then it's like, I don't have a dorsal. Yes, you do. I've never seen one. Well, doesn't mean you don't have one. Like, that's how he works. So if everybody's, or the new racism is not knowing we're racist, is that what it is?
So everybody's racist. You either admit you're a racist or you don't admit you're a racist, and you're both racist?
It's like, do you beat your wife anymore? It's
what?
Like,
wait, what?
Yeah. No?
Yeah. I just thought, again, 2017. Like, let's just stop dragging it.
And it got
so
an applause
hard.
Break. Well, that was the worst. Like,
people are
more confused than anything. Like, that sounds like we're applause worthy.
If you hear it again, Gary, that part, it sounds profound.
Yes,
and it also sounds like if you go, if you watch a bad sitcom, and you hear the cadence of a joke, mm-hmm. and then a non-joke comes out of Tim Allen's mouth, the audience will laugh because they felt the cadence of the joke. Feels like the cadence of something we should applaud for.
Right. There's a 1.25 second lag where like everyone's looking at each other like, we should applaud that, right?
One more time, sorry.
Problem. The other part, I don't know how to fix racism. It's been here for a really long time.
But this
time.
Problem specifically, which is I always say, the new racism is not knowing you're a racist.
Right.
Pause,
well,
pause,
I think this.
Pause.
All the white people clapping.
You know what kind of person that sounds like? It sounds like the one that you hate that says, oh, no, we don't say divisive anymore.
Mm. Yes.
You know, it's the divisive. Same type of, you don't know you're a racist. You don't know that what you're saying is wrong. Therefore, shame on you.
My bigger concern is this, and said it once, but I'll say it again. Me trying to convince folks, black or white, or anything in between, between the white potato and the yam, regular rest
of
the yam,
anything
in between. This is not for my benefit. I think the thought is, Whitey is trying to talk everyone out of this because, of course, it makes Whitey look pretty bad in 2017 if you're still a racist and so on and so forth. Whatever I feel, and whatever I know. I'm not going to talk anyone in or out of it. I'm fine with me. But I am doing this on behalf of all the folks of color in this society because if you feel like you're living in a world where even the guys that aren't racist and don't have any history of it, and maybe even immigrants themselves are from Croatia or something, are harboring this secret thing that not even they're aware of, meaning according to Dr. Drew, every partner you have sex with is going to have HPV and be shedding warts.
Sure.
That's going to freak you out on a Friday night when you're going out to a bar trying to make the scene, right?
Yes.
I mean, I wouldn't want to walk into the singles bar thinking everyone had warts, and I wouldn't want to be the black guy walking in thinking every white person had some degree of racism against me.
And warts.
Both lying dormant.
And
I don't know it.
It would make for a very uncomfortable, unhappy life.
Yeah.
It really would make an uncomfortable, unhappy life.
Awkward, stilted exchanges.
Just
daily.
Your entire life is just you walking around, and anytime anything happens, and we've all, you know, the other week I was walking down the sidewalk, and there was a white woman, and she was sitting in her Honda, and she had the door wide open, and she was just talking on the phone. And she just wanted the door open, like to get air or something. And I was just walking down the sidewalk, and the door was taking up the whole sidewalk, and it was against like a big brick wall facade of a building. And she just looked at me, and she had the door open. I was like walking at her. And eventually, I just walked out in the street and walked around her because she didn't have the dignity or the courtesy just to close the door.
Yeah.
All right. But if I'm black and I got to hear this all day long, we got a racist on our hands.
Yep. Blocking the sidewalk.
Yeah, you know, if that was a red-haired guy walking down that sidewalk, he would have happily closed that door.
Sure. Sorry about that.
Right, so let's stop beating this drum, because it's making everybody who is of any color uncomfortable.
Sure.
It's not any interaction with the cops, and any interaction with a stranger, neighbors, what have you, you're going to have this feeling, especially if we've now opened it up to not being racist or saying you're not racist not knowing you're racist is the new racist. Now now that is the entire planet. All right, let's see. We got a Baldywood.
I got some news too.
Coming up, some news coming up. First, I'll tell you guys about this Blue Apron. Ah, fresh, high quality ingredients.
This leads into my news.
Oh, good. Less than $10 a meal. New recipes created each week and are not repeated within a year. Takes 40 minutes or less. Upcoming meals, spinach and mozzarella pizza with olive pepper and ricotta salad, Parmesan crusted chicken with creamy fettuccine, sweet and sour salmon. Oh, it's so good. It's all so good, and it's so fresh, and it's better than it needs to be. Mm-hmm. I put the challenge out. Get the Blue Apron, and then tweet me if you're anything other than 100% satisfied. Not gotten one negative tweet yet. Delivery options to fit your needs. No weekly commitment. You just get the deliveries you want, people. Check out this week's menu and get three meals for free with free shipping at blueapron.com/ace. That is blueapron.com/ace. Blue Apron. Get the three meals free. blueapron.com/ace. All right. Well, let me clear off the phone lines, and then we'll do the story and the train spotting. Also, quickly, I was going, I'm at the other warehouse whenever afternoons I have free, and I'm going through piles of junk and just clearing out old pictures and put the Loveline stuff, the Loveline and the newspaper clippings with the newspaper clippings. I was just going through pile. Found this with Trump stationery.
Wow.
On it. The Trump Organization. November 13th, 2012. Dear Adam, thank you for sending me a bottle of your new signature beverage, Mangria. I wish you great success on your new venture. It's delicious, he underlines. I don't think he drinks. With best wishes, sincerely, Donald J. Trump.
You got to frame that.
And then the thing that's so Trumpy, you're doing great, with the big exclamation point.
Big bold marker, too.
Do you think he wrote that himself? Because that's really interesting handwriting.
I've seen his, I don't know, I'd have to.
That's after you're on The Apprentice, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Because Mangria was after The Apprentice.
Yeah, we sent him that after it.
I'm saying he knew Adam, so I'm not shocked at him.
Well, the reason I'm wondering is because it looks like when you're trying to write as straight across as you can, so you put the ruler down and then you like write over it. Like, look at the bottom. It's so interesting.
He's lined very well.
Yeah.
Trump's is like an old school guy, though, who would be into like penmanship.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
All right. Well,
wow,
I like to think it is. And then I'm going to carry this thing around like Samuel L. Jackson did in A Hateful Eight.
Oh, that's right, with the letter?
Keep it in your breast pocket.
Just pull it out. That's what I'm going to be doing when I'm 70. Just hey, man, pull this out.
Let me see that letter one more time.
And then I'll carry the same weight when you're 70.
Oh, hanging horse spits on it. I love
Daisy Domergue.
Oh, man. That movie, underrated, I say. All right. The calls, and then we'll do the thing. All right. Hold the calls. Let me just blow through them here. Corey, 52, Ohio.
Hey, Ace Man. Loving the show. Loving the documentaries. 24-Hour War. Got it from my dad. Loved it.
It's on Amazon Prime now, if anyone wants to go see it for free. Thank you.
So good. I'm the guy who tweeted that you need to stop doing anything but making documentaries and podcasting. Just, you're so good.
Well, thanks.
And you were proven right again about the, we're all becoming pussies. heard another podcast about police chief in Daytona, Ohio. Or, I'm sorry, Daytona, Florida, and he can't find new recruits because the college age guys. Two things: one, they don't know how to communicate face to face because they only text, and this one, none of them know how to fight. They've never been in a fight in their entire life.
Yeah,
and when they find themselves in a fight, all those chemicals get run through their brains, and they do stupid things, and they have a gun.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah.
Grand Theft Auto situation. The,
unintended consequences.
I was just so I was just in my son's flag football game, and we were discussing. First off, he played two basketball. He lost last week in flag football. Then he had a two-game basketball tournament yesterday.
Just by stepping foot on the field in flag football, you lose.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. He lost the two games, but they charged $10 admission for me and $5 for Natalia.
What?
Wait, you pay to see this?
What are my choices? Lost.
Get a drone.
They got blown out today. I'm like, I turned to Lynette. I said, look, I am way under 20% in the victory department with Sonny. Baseball a million years ago, but basketball, football games, I go. That kid, they never win. And
well, how does it compare to his normal winning percentage? Is it on par with how he normally plays?
I get stories that things were better when I'm not there. Also, I'm the cooler dad.
No.
I'm the dad cooler. Not only that, but speaking of that, Baldwin's, I think, going to be on this show on the 27th of, he gets into town on the 27th and it's going to be on, I think, May 4th or
Gary,
something.
Gary, when is his match game? It's coming up soon, right?
Oh, that's...
Last night.
Oh, last darn night. It.
There'll be another one coming.
Oh, okay. Forgot about that.
Sorry.
You can watch tonight, 11 o'clock on Spike with Trace Atkins. Funny show. I think you'll enjoy that. Adam Carolla and Friends Build Stuff Live. So watch that. Enjoy it. Send me a tweet. All right. Not aggressive. Not aggressive enough. And my son. And... when I played football, they tell all the defensive backs, hey, when that ball's in the air, that's your ball. Mm-hmm. You're the receiver. You think you're playing defense. Right. You're not. You're playing offense. Well, that ball's in the air. You go get it.
Right.
You know, and it's
good mentality.
Then I explained, look, we're going to have to start stepping up our game a little here because we're having a long debate about why Sonny didn't need to learn to ride a bicycle the other day. And I was like, you're just going to have to get on the bike and you're going to have to put yourself out there a little bit. And he was like, don't need it. And at some point, I find...
He's 11?
He's 10. Sad, yes. Mm-hmm. I found my old East Valley Trojans football... Program.
Wow.
From
1975. You were 11. You were his age.
I was always two things trying to figure out. All right, so for a little contrast here. So there I am at the end with the big hair.
Oh, look at you.
And if you see Brian, you'll notice my arm is tucked into my jersey.
Make yourself look bigger.
Yeah.
Right?
No, because my shoulder was still dislocated. It was still dislocated when they took this picture. We played a game on a Saturday and we took a picture on a Monday. My shoulder been out of socket for 4 days.
Ew.
And speaking of riding bikes, let's not forget the reason I never saw another goddamn unicycle ever again is because I rode a unicycle with a huge cast on my arm. I just rode around with a cast on my arm. And my mother did no mothering at all, but somebody in the neighborhood must have went. When you see a kid with a large... Now, what people don't realize is I had a massive cast on my arm. And the reason I had a massive, and I don't mean just a full arm cast. The reason I had a large plaster cast on my arm is because my shoulder, which had been out of socket for 4 days and then put back in socket, the orthopedic surgeon had this concept, which is if he can keep enough weight on my socket, it will keep it down. His thing was he don't want my shoulder to come up and pop out again.
Sure.
His thing was to keep the weight on the ball and keep it in there. So I had a novelty size cast on. Yeah. It was there for weight. It wasn't there because I broke my arm. Right. My shoulder was broken, but my arm had this huge cast on it.
Oh, wow.
Do you think that was sound logic looking back?
I have no idea. Okay. He was the orthopedic surgeon. I let him do his job. I was 11 years old. The problem with the flaw with him was he then gave me the thing that hooked around my neck and hung off the cast. Mm-hmm. I quickly got rid of that and just was free form with the cast. Yeah. The cast would be swinging around. And I'd be riding around my unicycle with my cast swinging around. And when you see a kid on a unicycle...
Exactly the doctor orders.
Doctor's orders.
When you see a kid on a unicycle with a cast on his arm, you assume that's how he got the cast.
Sure. He's committed to that unicycle.
Yeah. Somebody must have reported back to my mom, this looks horrible or something. And that's when she made the decree of no more unicycle. And that's when... kid up the street named Chris, not the one who was my friend, borrowed it and then stole it and never gave it back. And that was the last unicycle I ever got. But
look
that
at your
was,
parenting. No yeah. more unicycle.
Horrible parenting on my mom's part. And like I said, in the pantheon of horrible parenting, this guy, Chris's mom, when I told my mom, well, would you contact her and see what she can do about, I'm broke. I need a unicycle. And that's the only thing I got. And I didn't want to give it away, but you said I had to get off it. And as soon as this kid found out I was going to be unicycle free for 3 months,
he
said, borrower and then stealer. And, he did this BS where he said, I put it in your yard and it never was in the yard. Yeah. And his whole family was a little bit, a little shifty. My mom talked to his mom. His mom gave if he said he put it in the yard, he put it in the yard.
Helpful.
Thank you. See you later. My mom reports back to me. Well, she said he put it in the yard, so what are you going to do? And that was the last unicycle I ever got. Now, two things. First off, there were three brothers, and two of them, including this one who borrowed the unicycle, were dead before their 25th birthday. And number two... every time I told someone this sob story later on in life, they went and got me a unicycle. So when people say to me...
Lousy with unicycles.
People say to me, like, why do you have 7 unicycles? Because every time, like, when I'd be at the man show and I'd be talking to Jennifer Heffler, and she's like, what's your unicycle? I'd go, well, I had a unicycle when I was 11. I broke my shoulder. Aww. My stupid mom gave it away. And it was literally the last unicycle I ever had.
You like, poor thing.
I never got another unicycle. And then 2 days later, a unicycle would show up.
Hey, you know it's a good idea for a gift for you.
He'll never expect
it. I bet I never expect this.
Now I'm lousy with unicycles. I rode a unicycle with a cast on my arm, and Sonny does not want to ride a bicycle. So there's a little...
It's like,
He also doesn't want to go into Warrior 2 in yoga.
Little difference there. All right. So yes, I could imagine we're having a tough time finding police officers. Matt, 40, Pennsylvania.
Hey, Adam.
Yeah, man.
Okay, great. Hey, I love you guys. Paul, Gina, everyone. Hey, hey. First let me ask, did anyone see the movie Bad Moms?
I did. I liked it.
Bad Moms. Okay. Sorry. Bad Moms?
Yeah, Bad Moms with Mila Kunis. And
oh, yeah. I didn't see it, but go ahead.
It was good for what it was. It was a comedy, and it hit the mark.
Yeah, so one of the main premises of the movie was she kicked the husband out because he was, quote, cheating on her online with some lady. You know, she thought he was just looking at porn, but then she realized he was actually like Skyping with another chick somewhere, and that was grounds enough for her to say he was cheating, and she kicked him out. So I was just curious if you thought, you know, that was a little far-fetched or not.
Would you care if you came in and Lynette closed her laptop really fast, said nothing, and she was having this emotional affair with this really nice, good listener? Want to hear about the day?
Enough about me.
I've been talking too much.
Yeah, I don't. I think in terms of cheating, it's a little in the eyes of the beholder. Like I know chicks that freak out over their guy going to a strip club, and they just they go berserk over they'll obsess over somebody's bachelor party, and you're just going to the bachelor party.
We just had the conversation. Christy and I just had the conversation because I'm going to the bachelor party, and I'm like, there's going to be strippers. He's like, have fun, have a good time.
Yeah, no, Lynette's. A little too casual with even telling me? That's like what it's the same thing with the car racing. It's like, oh, how's Lynette feel? It's like, she doesn't care. And then I go, wait a minute, she doesn't care. She cares a little bit. Yeah. So yeah, it's the bachelor party syndrome. Some women are berserk about it. And some women are just like, so what? It's what guys do.
Isn't it kind of a rite of passage before a wedding? Isn't that traditionally what we do?
I think the stripper aspect of it maybe rubs, I know for a fact, rubs a lot of women.
Rubs the right way.
Rubs the right way for a lot of men.
I think all roads lead to narcissism because this guy that you've decided to marry to the 23-year-old hottie is really just a 40-something-year-old guy with male pattern baldness who could lose a few, you know, and looks like a dollar bill walked in, not like some potential new mate or something. Yeah, there's nothing. You're giving your guy way too much credit for your average,
it's strip
club, whatever.
Also, perception is kind of reality when it comes to cheating. Like, if your girlfriend dumps you because she thinks you cheated, or she considers what you did cheating, it's at the end of the day, she dumped you and she considers it cheating. So don't do it again with her or someone like her.
So women have a ton of latitude because some women freak out if they see their guy watching porn. Mm-hmm. On online or the aforementioned bachelor party, or men are pretty much dick goes in, dick goes out. You know, there's cheating and we're very old school about
it. Primal, yeah.
Very primal about it.
Very yam and potato about it.
Yes. But as our first caller pointed out to, as dudes turn into chicks, then that online relationship might be more of a problem. Older school guys, it was very just either there was physical contact or there wasn't.
Now, thank God she has someone else to gab to, so I don't have to hear it.
Right. We had, there's a man show bit. I think it was Rent-A-Gay or something. Something of that nature.
We started to go on and on. You put him in your place and you left. Watch the game.
You could rent a gay guy out and you could be freed up to enjoy your life. Yeah. Gary, you see if you can find that. I think it was called Rent a Gay. I can't remember. All right. Last one. Rory, 39, Virginia.
Adam, Paul, Gina, big fan. Hey, this past week was the 50th anniversary of the Doors' debut album, and part of my favorite parts of the show was when you and David Wilde used to each bring in a song to listen to and discuss. I was wondering, what is your favorite kind of deep cut from the Doors? And I wouldn't mind if Dawson chimed in with his, too.
Oh. Dawson should chime in?
Dawson about the Doors.
My favorite Doors song is Break On Through, because it's almost like a punk song. It's a song. It's like a Ramones song from like 1968 or whenever.
It's got a groove.
Especially when it gets to the end.
You know the day destroys the night.
He asked for a deep cut. You give him a well-known song.
It's between this and Light My Fire.
It's a punk song from the especially at the end when he starts going. All right. Deep cut. All right. You ready? Deep cut. Crystal Ship.
Oh.
Nice.
You got to be in the right mood. But if you're in the right mood and you're in the right, had three corners of a pot brownie, not the fourth or the middle, just three corners.
Stay away.
This song can take you somewhere.
That's good.
All right. Thanks. Roy sounds like a guy. All right. That's called Lady Sitters? Huh? Oh, right. Lady Sitters. Sorry.
Wanna watch it?
Yeah. Crystal Ship is called Lady Sitters. Yeah. Lady Sitters. Yeah.
Confusing.
I forgot about
it. Hello.
Hey, buddy. You bowling tonight?
I can't. I got dinner at the wife's parents.
Honey, will you get off the phone?
Why don't you call the lady sitters?
Lady sitters? What's that?
Past 9 years, Lady Sitters has been leasing out high-quality homosexuals to entertain wives and liberate husbands across America.
They're on a paint truck.
With Lady Sitters, never again will your wife nag you to pick out drapes. Watch her soaps. Or go ballroom dancing. So while they're pampering themselves here, you can be pampering yourself here. while they're enjoying themselves here, you can be enjoying yourself here.
Strip club.
And while they're playing here, you can be playing here.
God, right.
With Lady Sitters, your wife will come back even better than before.
Training for
boost. Ice skating, Weight Watchers, John Tesh Live, PTA meetings, marriage counseling, making crepes, talking, or sharing. There's no need to suffer through another day of feminine misery. From the mall to Lamaze, just pick up the phone.
Done having sex.
You cut off.
Lady Sitters.
Yay!
Yay.
Boy, this Lady Sitters is a real lifesaver.
I'll say.
Lady Sitters. Not available in West Virginia, Tennessee, or Utah.
Lady Sitters.
Well done.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I forgot counseling. He can sit in on your counseling session.
John Teschla.
John Teschla. Making crepes.
Right. That's good.
I don't think they'd let you do any of that today, would they? Or would they?
Frown on
maybe
it.
Online, maybe.
Get a couple
maybe
of groups
a web
yelling
series.
At you.
All right. Sorry. Yes.
Do we have like a minute and a half?
Yes. For me to,
okay. So first of all, I went to the TCM Film Festival this weekend, saw amazing movies that I'd never seen before, broadcast news, and just movies are fantastic.
Never saw broadcast news?
Never. It's okay. Not one of my favorite movies.
Great movie.
You're that nerd.
And then Dana Gould may or may not have done something amazing that I'll have some video, I think, probably tomorrow for you. But
I'm a nerd, too.
Yep. I got a really sad, surprising phone call in the middle of this, walking around Hollywood Boulevard at the dirty Spider-Man pajama people and the tourists, and had no where to really stop and talk to anyone. But a very, very close friend of mine passed away on Friday, and I found out Saturday. I've known her since about 20 years since college. We were roommates when I moved out here, and it was a very sudden passing. And she was a really complicated person, like a really interesting person, really beautiful person. And she was a singer-songwriter. And you're always talking about all this music that you love, that you've introduced people to. And she was incredible. And one of my favorite songs of hers, I really thought you would like. That's a picture of she and I. And it's a song that she wrote when she and I were stuck at this dinner party that we didn't want to go to. And she ended up meeting this woman who was in her 80s. And my friend Lisa Donnelly, who wrote this, just was completely in love with this woman, became like a grandmother to her. And there's a song that I was hoping is okay if I play you a little.
Yeah.
It really explains who she wanted to be and who she tried to be. And I think you'll like it. It's called Laugh.
Next to a woman I don't know. Her perfume's bold as a dress. She's really old and yet she won't stop going on and on about where I'm going. She says, tell me your time and date of birth and I'll read your story in the stars. Your tangled mess will make more sense when you find out who you are. So baby, if you know what's good for ya, you gotta listen to me. Sex and money make the world go round. Breathe in when you're feeling down. Speak softly but stand tall and laugh at it all. Open your heart and close your legs. The only one what makes them bang. Get hurt and then do it again and laugh at it all. Through my skin,
all the places that you've been.
Through my palm she reads my fragile heart and sees the shattered state that it's in. Sex and money make the world go round. Breathe in when you're feeling down. Speak softly but stand tall.
Wow, she was quite a lyricist.
She was amazing.
So
I miss her, and thank you for letting me do that.
Can you tell us?
She was 36, 37.
And we're assuming that she took her own life, or we don't know everything?
I can't really say right now. I'm not
totally sure. Is there anywhere you want to send people who have thoughts about her, or want to find out more information?
I believe her. Maybe? Is there like a website?
Oh, my God. LisaDonnelly.com, I hope, is still up. A lot of her music is on Spotify and on iTunes. And her family, I think, has taken over her Facebook page. So people are leaving memories there. And she was a really special musician. So definitely check out her music.
Mm. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you.
That sucks.
You feel all right? I mean, you feel like
okay.
That was the worst intro to news ever.
You know what though? Like, I have to say, I think it's about either growing up or evolving emotionally, or working here. You keep moving. You know, try to keep moving.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's. Well, you know, I go to the warehouse every Sunday and go through piles of pictures from 20 years ago of, you know, stuff. So, and you just look back at all these people, like, what happened to that guy and what happened to her? Where are we and what the hell? And
why is my arm in a sling?
You know, is my arm in a sling?
In a novelty weighted cap.
Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, that's it. Just say thanks every day when you get up in the morning and try to be the best you can be. Yeah.
That was a nice tribute, I thought.
Thank you. And it was that the song was very, very, very much seemed to be in who she was.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Poor Bald Brian's got to do his
Bollywood. I'm not following
now.
That.
Help us out. Make us
well,
laugh.
Look, our guest has been here for half an hour. And we can,
you
can
tell us.
All right. Good for tomorrow.
Oh, the story. I'm not following that. My story. The story's fine for tomorrow.
The story's fine, and Bollywood is fine?
Yeah, of course.
All right, let's do that. Yeah. Let me tell you guys, and we'll bring Mick Garrison. I'll tell you guys about Smart Mouth. There you go. The only activated mouthwash clinically proven to instantly eliminate bad breath and prevent bad breath from coming back for 12 full hours. Two separate liquids combined to activate zinc ions that stop bacteria from producing sulfur gas for 12 full hours. So, nothing ruins the intimate moment quicker than the nasty breath. So next time you're out drinking, smoking, getting high, use that Smart Mouth, man, before you head home with that little special someone. Even prevents the morning breath because you give it a shot before you go to bed and you don't wake up with that morning breath. It's smartmouth.com. You can find it there at smartmouth.com, or you can go to Walmart, Target, Walgreens, CVS, whatever. Wherever. It's Smart Mouth. It's serious stuff. It's not some weird purple stuff. Two parts, man. Put it in.
Specifically.
Purple drank. Just put it in. All right. The podcast, Postmortem, this hosted by Mick McGarris. We'll have him in. He's got some crazy stories. We'll talk to him right after this.
I'm John Horn. I'm the host of Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. I'm here with our very first guest, Rainn Wilson.
Hi, John. It looks like I'm the first guest on the Geffen Unclothed. Unscripted. Unscripted. Yeah, let's go with that.
A marriage made in heaven, I guess.
Or Westwood.
Tune in for some of our exciting upcoming guests. David Copperfield, Neil LaBute, Neil Patrick Harris, Josh Gad, Rita Wilson, and many more. Be sure to download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app and on iTunes. And don't forget to rate, review, and share.
And I'm Rainn Wilson, the first guest.
You are first guest.
This was a huge mistake.
Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Huge mistake.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Adam Carolla and friends build stuff live. And it's new time, Monday, 11:10 Central on Spike.
I dug up a tape because of this show that you probably haven't seen in 24 years.
Is it Sex Bunk?
If you're in the SoCal area and want to be an in-studio guest, to ask Adam a home improvement question live, email CorollaQuestions@gmail.com. And maybe you'll get VIP seats and some FaceTime with the Ace Man.
Been doing this for 10 years.
Okay, f*** you.
Okay.
This week, Trace Adkins joins the show, and you'll learn how to build patio furniture out of pallets.
This will be the last show I do, I'm sure, but this is this show.
Adam Carolla and friends build stuff live.
And Ray's on this show, too, which makes it even more dangerous.
Mondays, 11, 10 Central on Spike.
Mick Garris in studio, his podcast, Postmortem. Website, mickgarrisinterviews.com. Mick's interviewed everybody over his crazy storied career, including the Rod Serling and Ray Bradbury. But that was so far back. So you had your own newspaper back in the day?
Yeah, I started a magazine when I was 18 years old called Arthur the Magazine. And I did music stuff. I was a singer in a band for a while. I interviewed Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin when I was in high school. You know, Ray Bradbury and Rod Serling, who were kind of inspirations to me as a writer that launched my efforts at 12.
It's funny, when you talk to some of these people or you hear about some of these guys' stories, like Judd Apatow, and they're like, well, when I was 14, I interviewed every comedian from Seinfeld to Jerry Lewis to whatever, you know, to Shecky Green, and you go, how'd that work? And you go, I just wrote them a letter, and then I just showed up at the, I knew they're playing Caroline, so I just went there. It's kind of amazing what you can do if you just kind of go do it,
try
right?
It. Yeah.
Naivete goes a long way.
Yeah.
You know, if you have no expectations, you go, there's no reason not to do it. You don't realize there are a lot of reasons not to do it.
So how does one get hold of Rod Serling, like, back in the day?
He was coming to speak at a local college when I was in high school, and I was going to the lecture that he was giving. And I talked to the people who were programming it at the school and said, I'm writing for my school paper, and I'd love to talk to Mr. Serling, and I knew.
Are you 12 at this point?
At that point, I was 15 or 16.
Oh, you're a seasoned journalist.
Yeah, I was well into it.
Yeah. Almost the press editor
thing
chief.
Out of it. Exactly. Yeah, chief, I got a, Perry White sent me. Yeah.
So, and Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have a question about this. This sort of naivete, it's a little more than that. Is it something you can instill in someone, you know what I mean? Or is this just sort of born into you and
well,
good,
I think
good
it was,
for you?
It was a match of passion and naivete.
Right.
You know, it was I loved music more than anything in my teenage
These
years.
These are people you admired and you wanted, you
people
wanted to
I
talk
loved,
to.
And I was, you know, I was going to the concerts and I would talk to the promoters saying I'm writing for such and such a magazine. I really started writing for the San Diego Door, which was an underground paper that Cameron Crowe wrote for. He was 15 and I was 17 when we wrote for that. He made a movie about it called Almost Famous.
Great
right.
movie.
So
great
the first
movie.
Half of that is my life too. Then it veers off to his life because he became successful at Rolling Stone magazine and I was in the trenches.
Yeah. Did so was there anything you know, with Janis Joplin or Jimi Hendrix or whomever, did they emanate anything that made you feel differently about whatever was coming off of them? I mean, everyone has words and they'll answer questions, but just being in the presence of a Jimi Hendrix, is there something that comes off of Jimi Hendrix?
Well, Jimi Hendrix, definitely. There was not any getting really close to him in conversation, but Janis Joplin was probably the most powerful interview I'd ever done. She'd been drinking, and she was...
Janis Joplin?
Yes,
Pearl,
believe it or not.
Had been drinking.
Yeah.
Janis was sober.
She was in tears. And she was saying, I ain't got no man, my band is my man, and very, very melancholy. And it got, you know, really intimate. And it was something that was kind of startling. And it was so reflected in her music. I mean, the pain, the sensitivity that she had was so incredibly apparent to me, a 16-year-old kid.
I think we've stumbled onto something, which is... I love Janis Joplin, Janis Ian, and anyone named Janis, Jan Michael Vincent. Yeah. I love them all.
Janis the Muppet.
Janis DeWitt.
I love anyone named Janis. And then I started thinking to myself, why is Katy Perry so annoying and why is Rihanna so annoying? They're too hot.
Yeah.
Janis Joplin was literally like declared the ugliest date at a fraternity house or something. Like, hey, who could bring the ugliest chick, you know, back when that stuff was in vogue.
She was traumatized by that stuff.
Totally traumatized. Yeah. And that's why we got great lyrics and great art.
Yeah.
Now
it comes from pain.
Katy Perry and Rihanna taking a good look in the mirror at 16, going, "I got nothing to sing about but fireworks."
Homecoming queen again.
Yeah. Shania Twain. What's she singing about? Come on, fellas.
That doesn't impress me much.
Yeah, like, of course there's nothing there. Look in the mirror. Why should there be anything there?
There's never been a bottle of Jack and tears for them.
Right. No, they're too good looking. That's why the music sucks. Come on, nines and above. We're going out cock teasing. Come on, I got a Humvee with a hot tub in it. Let's go. Let's have a bunch of saps buy us free booze. All right. No, but there is a connect. I was wondering, because these people, you know, Janis Joplin, what, died at 27, right?
Yeah.
Was out blowing the roof off of places at 22, 23 years old, and you're kind of looking at all these young, hot chicks, and they're not doing anything now, and it's because they're hot.
Yeah. Pain makes art.
It does. Yeah.
Footnote to that, isn't it insane that there has not been a biopic made about Janis Joplin? Like, all just the rich material.
They've threatened it many
Melissa
times.
Edwards was attached for many years.
Right. Well, and there's also been plays and musicals that were, I think they're trying to get to Broadway.
Right.
Does that count?
Not at all.
Okay.
I have always wanted to be a part of that because, you know, because I've done well in doing horror films and the like, it's kind of a ghetto that you don't often get out of. So they don't think of me as somebody who would do a rock and roll biopic. But having met her, not known her, but met her, and so passionate about the music of that period and being so involved, I'm the perfect guy to do it. But I don't think I'm going to get the opportunity.
I wonder, it's perfect for her because of how incredibly talented she was and all the pain
died young and had amazing talent.
Whole life. And her 356 Porsche, 1964,
always comes back to cars.
Something like that.
JJ Arms involved.
If it's anything to do, that's a good sign. She had a roadie paint up her thing in a flower power theme.
Okay, yeah.
You know,
it's iconic, yeah.
And things sold at auction for like 1.something million bucks a couple years ago.
Surprises that little.
It's a good sign. Wow. Well, yeah, it's cars.
This is iconic, you know.
No, cars are weird because you'd go, oh, that's the limousine that the Beatles, and it doesn't go for that much. Yeah. But
well,
if
the
it's
white Rolls Royce that John Lennon used to drive was a $100,000 car in its day.
It went for $1.7 million, which is a lot. But if it's a Steve McQueen thing, like who's associated with cars, then it goes, she's not associated with cars. But even that, it was $150,000 car that went for $1.7 million. That's a decent markup.
It's like, how much is the story worth?
Yeah.
I have a slight theory on the Janis Joplin thing and why the biopic's hasn't come to fruition this far. And it's kind of why I think a Freddie Mercury biopic also hasn't come to fruition thus far. Their talent was so unique. Like, nobody sounds like Janis Joplin. No one ever has since her, and no one probably ever will. No one sounds like Freddie Mercury that we know that can sing, you know, is it like in today. So I wonder if it's that hard to cast somebody. Like, that's why it's so easy to cast someone in the Johnny Cash story. All someone has to do is look sullen and sing like, oh, I shot a man in Reno just to... Like,
that was
anyone
very,
can do that.
That was very insulting.
Anyone can do
you
that.
Close your eyes. You think Johnny's in the room. I'm with you, like, on the Johnny Cash things. Like, I'm not as in love with him as the world is in love with him.
I'm saying there are 50 great actors
I'm with
who can
you.
Do a Johnny Cash.
I'm with you on that. Although, when I heard that Sacha Baron Cohen, who I believe can do anything if he puts his mind to it, and if you close your eyes, you can see him as Freddie Mercury.
Yep,
when I heard he was doing Freddie Mercury, I was like, oh my God, this is an Oscar. He's getting an Oscar for this. It's going to be insane. But I don't know what happened. Does anyone know what happened?
I thought it was being made. Did they not do it?
I've heard about this three, five years ago. Yeah, like Gary can look it up.
Right.
So sorry, post-mortem.
Topic.
It's your fault for being interesting, because we don't have too many people have talked to Janis and Jimmy. Jimmy was just kind of being standoffish.
Well, I think he was not interested in anything but the music. You know, he was there to play music and wasn't really interested in talking to the press, especially a 16-year-old journalist. So Janis was as open as you can be. They were very, very different, at least in my experience with the two of them.
Rami Malek is the actor who's attached, which most people would probably know from Mr. Robot.
Oh, wow.
Oh, there you go.
He's a big up and coming. He'll be a big star soon.
I'll bet somebody else sings.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking, Brian, when you said that. Why wouldn't they just use the original voice for the
But back to Val Kilmer and the Doors, man. That was unbelievable. He just was Jim Morrison.
Perfect.
Okay. Yeah. Just perfect.
Yeah, Oliver Stone did an amazing job with that movie,
Completely agree. And Stone, for me, was sort of like Quentin Tarantino is now, which is there was only a few guys whose movies I really look forward to coming out. He kind of jumped the shark, Stone. I mean, I think he kind of went a little nuts or something. But,
maybe.
But back in the day, now it's sort of Quentin Tarantino.
Prime. Right. So, people who can write their own ticket. You know, they can do the movies they want rather than what the studio wants them to do.
And also, no one's going to let him do three-hour things, drop 35 N-bombs in Act 1.
Right.
Postmortem, tell us about it.
Postmortem is basically kind of a something that happened a few years ago as a television show I did. But I get together filmmakers in the horror genre, and we just sit and have a conversation for an hour or so.
Eli Roth, speaking of Tarantino, Eli Roth, who's a real good guy.
Real good guy.
I like to think of him as a friend and just a really nice guy. In the horror business as well. So sit down and go one-on-one in that genre.
Yeah.
Has it ever been... I just had lunch with Chris, the guy's doing all the Fast and Furious. The guy writes all the Fast and Furious movies. And I said, what's new? And he said, well, we got all the monster movies.
Oh, right. Universal is making new versions of the horror movies in the PG-13 realm.
Chris Morgan. So his office, his wing, his whatever they give him over there. Super nice guy. Lives in my neighborhood. He's a Loveline fan or something. He's a real friendly guy, but he's explained to me. I said, well, my grandpa did the Mole People. He's like, maybe we'll have that. We just got the whole library.
Are we talking Dracula, Frankenstein?
Yeah, yeah. All the whole library of monster movies are all been acquired, and they're all going into production. And so it's a bit of a renaissance, I guess.
Yeah, the Universal Monsters. Starting, I guess, with The Mummy with Tom Cruise, of all things. But they're big action movies rather than big horror movies. They're turning them into something that is a PG-13 franchise and not a lot in the realm of blood and guts and the like. They were very transgressive in their day, the original ones. I mean, people fainted in 1931 during Frankenstein when he turned around and revealed himself for the first time, the monster. People literally passed out in the theaters. But these days, you know, they're really, it's like Indiana Jones movies rather than Boris Karloff movies.
What are some of your favorite all-timers, older or newer, in what you consider the horror genre?
Well, one of my favorites is a movie called Dead Ringers that David Cronenberg made in 1989.
Yeah.
Jeremy Irons plays twin surgeons.
And yeah, were they gynecologists?
Gynecologists.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a progression of their madness. They lose their minds in quick succession as they live with one another as brothers and trade lovers without the lovers knowing. And it just goes to a very dark and wonderful
place. Like during their annual?
Yes, exactly. Your turn, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It's not really in rotation. It doesn't get spoken of very much.
Not
but it was
much.
A really cool movie, and especially people forget, or maybe they don't, how good Jeremy Irons.
It was an Oscar worthy, but horror movies don't get Oscar movies except Silence of the Lambs. That kind of swept it, but that's the exception.
Dead Ringers. What else? I personally always enjoyed the Manhunter, the first one, even a little bit more. And I thought, whatever Cox, I liked the first
Brian Cox. Yeah.
I thought the first Hannibal Lecter was amazing. I loved Brian Cox.
He's brilliant in that. It's great.
And later on, you know, Hannibal Lecter sort of became a caricature of it, But Brian Cox was much more interesting in that movie. If people hadn't seen the first one,
completely played it very, very differently, very downplayed, but it was really distressing and unnerving. Mm-hmm. It was a great performance.
And for me, I liked it a little bit. Well, I liked Silence of the Lambs, but the Manhunter I liked a lot as well because Brian Cox's character wasn't kept in an underground salt mine. He was just in a... It always bothers me a little bit when... I was just at the end of Fast and Furious 7, mm-hmm. when they're like... They do the thing where they walk Jason Statham. They walk him down like
into the unbreakable prison.
Like, yeah, it's a 200-yard corridor, and each door has a gun sticking out of it. And he's got shackles on, and they sit him down. And The Rock says, there's 32 feet of enforced concrete behind you, above you, and below you. If you can get through that with a spork, I'll be waiting on the other side to put a can of whoop-ass on you. And he goes, you know I'll be there. And it's like... I know. I don't know that you're going to be there. How many times has Charles Manson escaped prison? Is it
zero?
Zero. It doesn't take much. About 4 inches of concrete and some steel.
Everyone in there is determined to get out. Don't get me wrong.
You're not going anywhere. So there's things like they've never built a facility that can hold. The guy's in leg irons. He's not going anywhere. As a matter of fact, he'll die in 5 days if they don't feed him. Oh, wait. Here he is. No, he can't be held. Those are guns.
Very expensive prison.
Yeah.
Lined with guns.
Yeah.
Oh, they ain't mine. They're here to protect you. From me killing your ass.
Love the smirk and the music.
Yeah.
You do know none of this will keep me, right?
None of it! Not even the 30 feet of concrete?
Well, once you dig through 38 feet of concrete and steel, my fist and a body bag will be waiting for you on the other side. So I suggest you get to digging, boy.
Never seen Citizen Kane. Oh, seen this 123 times.
You came to my number one horror film.
I do like when they just casually go, you know, this will never hold me. Like, how could it not hold anything?
Oh, I
any
know.
Creature. But, so the first one, they just kept him in a sort of a prison.
Right.
It wasn't a cave.
A regular old, yeah.
Yeah, they got a little.
Couple of bars.
They used a little artistic license when the second one came around.
Yeah, definitely the first one was not made as a horror film, and not with such a sense of visual exaggeration.
To be fair to the story, he escaped in Manhunter,
right.
And so they needed to keep him in the dungeon down below, because he used the phone, the thing, oh, would you mind giving me the number, that whole thing.
I love that.
It was a great turn.
Didn't it's have use poop. Of his hands.
I know.
I'll bet there's a Rolodex. There you go. Yeah, it's a good one. People should go find that. And then what else? Anything else we're
well,
missing?
You know, I love Bride of Frankenstein. If you're going way back to those, that's my favorite of the Universal classics. But last year was my favorite movie last year was called The Invitation by a director named Karin Kusama, a little independent movie about a group of 30-somethings who haven't seen each other in several years. They live in the Hollywood Hills, and this couple has discovered a new lifestyle that they want to share, and it's a cult, and it becomes incredibly darker and darker and darker, and it becomes something quite shocking and violent, and really a very special movie. If you haven't seen it, I think it's on Netflix now, but it's brilliant.
How are we doing with Get Out? Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Gina.
Love Get Out.
But do you consider it a horror movie?
I do. I do. I think there's enough of the tropes. You know, it's like the Stepford Wives. It's
go.
A horror movie. Yeah. And
we've been going back and forth about it. Is it a thriller? Is it a horror?
Yeah. It's a racial Stepford Wives. And I think that makes it a really... It is a horror movie, and especially from a perspective we're not used to seeing.
Right.
I think it's great. I loved it.
Speaking of The Invitation, it reminded me of a movie that came out probably 20 years ago. Did you ever see The Last Supper? Which I thought had kind of the same theme of the dinner party and
I
things
didn't
take
see
a
that
turn.
One. No. Okay, I will now.
You might want to put that one in. That's pretty good.
On the list. Yeah.
Netflix, baby. All right. So it is postmortem, and it is on Wednesdays, on every other Wednesday.
Every
say,
other Wednesday.
On Podcast One. Eli Roth, a good friend you can check out coming up. Should we do a little news, Gina Grad?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Great. Viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The News with Gina Grad.
Well, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame held its 32nd annual induction ceremony on Friday in New York, and despite all the speculation, Steve Perry did not sing with Journey. But during his speech, he did thank the band's current vocalist, Arnel Pineda, who sang his little heart out, and the two singers met for the first time backstage that night, and guitarist Neil Sean thanked Perry for being, quote, one in a million, and dedicated the band's performance of Lights to him, but he did not sing with them.
So is his voice shot? Is he?
I think
sing?
It's more of a possible feuding thing, like a.
But he showed up.
Yes.
I'm with Brian,
because if it was a feuding thing, he probably would have been, screw you guys, I'm not showing up.
Yeah. Well, that was the big debate. Is he even going to show up? And then a lot of people predicted by the third song he's going to jump in and sing a chorus or something, but he didn't.
My theory in life is the guys with the big dicks are always up. They're always up for skinny dipping.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Like with the guy with the six pack abs and the huge hog, and someone goes, "Let's go skinny dipping." That guy's like, you know, he won't. If he's smart, he doesn't push the agenda, but he'll go, "Oh yeah,
hey,
if everyone's going, yeah, why not?"
You know, Mick is nodding furiously.
I've noticed that in life. Like I'll give you a perfect example. I was in the other warehouse. I put it on the Sonos, and I was just there shuffling, doing what I do on a Saturday, going through papers and putting stuff away and hanging up pictures and doing my thing. And I hit like, lost 80s, whatever, and I hit Sonos. And God, within about a 40-minute segment, three Paul Abdul songs came on.
Lost. And I used to, Lost 80s.
I know. Well, they always give it a stupid title.
It's in your face.
I was screaming at people when she was making this music. I'm holding my fingers up in air quotes. This is horrible. This is horrible. It's not music. And they're like, oh, it's good stuff. You can dance to it. And it's like, it's not. By the way, in that same period, three Prince songs came up and sounded almost equally as bad as hers does. Everyone worships the altar of Prince. Super talented human being. These songs don't sound good. They don't age well at all. But she is horrible. She is goddamn horrible. And here's the thing. She was on a show where they like mentored singers for seven series.
Yeah.
Anyone remember an episode where she got up on stage and held a microphone?
Nope.
Like, here's the deal. I went to one event involving my daughter's skipping rope. Guess who was on stage skipping rope? Because I can.
Paul Abdul.
That's right. You know exactly.
I know where you're going every time. I know where you're going every time.
Anyone heard about Paul Abdul out in concert, on tour, like singing this? Singing at Star Spangled Banner at the beginning of the hockey game? Or like, have anyone seen Paul Abdul sing? She's doing a TV show where she rates singers. If she had chops or ability, every third episode would be she's doing a duet with the Paul Abdul song up on whatever, or the person who will do things for money, namely Paul Abdul, you would see is on tour.
A new album coming out.
Yes, you That's see. Something. Look, the band Chicago can play. Thus, once a year, they pop up at the Greek Theater. Chicago's playing at the Greek Theater. When do you see Paul Abdul?
With Chicago? Never. Never once.
Zero ability cannot do it. So, I'm not saying that his voice is shot, but I am saying those songs are hard. And
set the bar high with the vocals.
If he thought he could go out there and just make everyone feel like, hey, scrawny Asian guy, let me tell you how this song is really done.
Supposed to be done.
If there was an element of that, well, then I think you'd see it. If it's a guy with a bigger hog and better pecs, and he's getting into the pond first, and it's a full moon, then you sit up there and you go, I would go in, but it's a little cold outside. Yeah. I think I saw an angry beaver in there.
I'm on antibiotics.
I can't get water in my ears.
That's a fair point. Very, very fair point.
So I just, maybe it's me being a cynic, but I assume when the person doesn't do it, unless it's a, you know, John Fogerty feuding with the band, feuding with the label,
he was there.
It's one of those things. But then the second Fogerty can perform, he performs.
Right. Oh, and speaking of the induction, Pearl Jam was inducted, and it was supposed to be done by Neil Young, who, you know, they're big fans of each other. Neil Young got sick, so do you know who inducted Pearl Jam into the Hall of Fame?
Is Letterman?
David Letterman.
Oh,
who was a big fan of Eddie Vedder. Huge fan.
Was his beard crazy?
It was crazy. Down to the floor.
All right, which you tell me which cluster of hair is in more need of conditioner? Letterman's beard
or
Neil Young's hair?
Or Paula Abdul?
Yeah. Might be Paula Abdul.
Yeah. Neil Young's hair.
Okay. See,
I bet Letterman's beard has got some runoff from his head once or twice.
I think Neil Young might actually need to degrease a little bit. So I think the dryness comes from Letterman's beard.
Oh, okay.
Something to think about.
Wow.
We'll never know the answer.
So Neil Young bringing you in is cool, but Letterman cooler because
pretty
Letterman
cool.
does nothing mm-hmm. ever. And that's when he did a full-time show and did nothing.
Right.
Now he's under obligation.
He's
no obligation
grid.
To do anything,
yeah.
And he went and did it.
Yeah, people were confused because there was like a quick TMZ interview with him, and it looked like he was in Times Square, and they're like, what in the hell is he doing in New York? Well, this is why he was there.
Hmm. Yep. And this all airs?
Gwen is there in 2 weeks, I think.
Okay.
I'll look it up, but it happened on Friday.
Had a lot of like stone people at the sound down. ZZ Top bringing out Pearl Jam.
By the way, the only guy who doesn't have a beard in ZZ Top, you know,
that's the last name of
name's Beard.
Beard, yeah. That's right.
Well, ABC 7 reports that the girls' bathroom at Laguna Hills High School doesn't have mirrors at all. Instead, the walls are covered with handwritten affirmations and messages of encouragement and positivity.
April, how the fat is going to know they're fat. Airing April 29th, so we hear it. Yes.
You break the toilets.
The messages are hung above the bathroom sinks where mirrors would typically be, as well as taped to the outside of each bathroom stall, and each one delivers a message that aims to remind each girl of their own worth. It says, you're beautiful, you're capable, you are unique, you are not alone, you are enough. The school hopes that the girls will be less annoyed about not being able to check their hair and makeup and more inspired by the notes.
Well, I can tell you, especially in high school, you can go the whole day with a nice whitehead that's ready to go. You need to check for whiteheads. You can wake up at 7 in the morning, check yourself, and have a nice whitehead brewing by homeroom,
yep.
And then you just skate all the way through, and you get home at 4 in the afternoon, like, oh, my God.
And no one tells you.
Nope.
Well, Ray would tell you, my buddy
that's
Ray.
A good, that's
no,
a good
well, he'd want to pop it. Yeah. But the point is you got to check. In high school, you can cultivate a whitehead
yep.
in the course of a couple hours, no problemo. Mm-hmm. You need it for that.
In mirror stat.
Yeah,
all this going nice. To do is get chicks to bring in mirrors.
Yeah.
Or use their phones or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You got some of your teeth.
I don't like it. Thank
yeah.
you. Exactly. This
well,
is where you go in and check yourself.
Also, though, this thing of like stay positive really doesn't mean anything or sort of be happy or just whatever. You're beautiful or you're unique or you're the best. Like the problem with your sort of number one thing is now everyone's number one and now nobody's number one.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. You have to go out and accomplish whatever it is you want or need to accomplish or not. But just the aphorism thing just doesn't work.
And it's not like it's going to change. Taking away the scoreboard doesn't let the bad players know they're not bad. You know what I mean? The bad teams know they're not bad.
That's a sniff, Brian.
Well, thank you.
You
know you suck. The scoreboard doesn't have to tell you. You know.
I agree. And one of the things we were noting, my wife and I, while we were watching my son and his football team.
Speaking of which.
Taking on. It's been. Shellacked more than a hardwood floor, that boy. At a church where they have square dancing three times a week. Like, that's how much shellacking he has been shellacked. He gets shellacked routinely. And the thing that's funny is, like, you know, we lean over and we go, never seems to be in a bad mood about just getting his ass handed to him, you know? And I'm like, yeah. And then my wife said, I guess that's good. And then I said, I'm going to have some. I remember when I played Pop Warner football, if we got beat on a Saturday at noon, my weekend was kind of shot. Like,
yeah.
I was not happy for the rest of that weekend.
Right.
I felt bad. I felt like we should have won or we could have won or we should have done something. I didn't like the taste in my mouth. My son rolls right off him. So, again, the problem is, well, that's good if you got to live with him because you don't have a kid moping around all
right.
day just because he took a loss on the gridiron. On the other hand, where's the motivation
mm-hmm.
if that's doesn't make you feel like anything?
Well, if they're always losing, maybe he's kind of
yeah, maybe he's used to it.
Better,
yeah, it's just a lot in life.
Well, Vern Troyer has been hospitalized for alcohol addiction. You know, the little diminutive Austin Powers star has been in a San Fernando Valley hospital bed.
Two thimble a day habit.
For nearly 2 weeks, according to TMZ. He plans to check into rehab by the end of the week. This isn't the first time, by the way, that Vern Troyer has struggled with alcohol abuse. He's gone to rehab several times, almost died in 2002 from alcohol poisoning.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not in a comical way, but if a flask or pint of gin could, mm-hmm. I mean, from your terms of your, it's all just about volume, right? Right? I mean, you know, they tell you these stories about Andre the Giant. He'd have 14 bottles of wine and eat 11 chickens, right. You know, and go out and play golf, you know, like literally like, they tell you to drink like 27 beers, you know, he was a giant man. If you weigh 41 pounds, and you drink a couple of tall boys, yeah. your blood alcohol level's going to be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's right in the thing that DMV gives you, is sort of your weight, right? Where they go, like, you can have two beers an hour to get to 0.08, if you're between 120 and 100, you know, right. But if you're 180 pounds to 200 pounds, you can have 3.5 beers or whatever it is. It's probably the only time dudes and chicks round up weight-wise.
I'm good.
You're 191. Oh, I'm more like 200.
I had a big
I'm
dinner.
More like 200.
I had an yeah. extra serving of yams.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, speaking of horror, this is something that they might have to consider with the new releases of the new horror movies. A new article has been published that examines the top 10 heroes and villains on the American Film Institute 100 Greatest Heroes and Villains list, and discovered that 6 out of the top 10 villains have some kind of skin condition. Mm-hmm. For example, Hannibal Lecter, Darth Vader. Exactly.
Hair loss. I say probably bald too, but hair loss,
alopecia. Yep. Both the Wicked Witch of the West and the Queen from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs have facial warts.
We had to make them grotesque back in the day.
Yes. Well, the authors argue that Hollywood tends to put skin conditions in an evil context. Back during the
Blofeld had the scar.
See, you're proving the point.
And you're back to warts.
Exactly. Back during the silent film era, filmmakers used skin conditions to showcase the wickedness of somebody because they couldn't do it via spoken word. So they used these depictions of skin conditions on the big screen, and they've stuck around through today. And the article mentions the National Organization for Albinism and Hypopigmentation as one group that's advocating not casting albinos as victims.
As victims or as villains?
I'm sorry, as villains.
Yeah, villains. Well, we have to do the albino because they have the pink eye, and that's the scariest. It's super evil. Then also, it's a kind of a chicken or the egg thing, because when the dude has really bad skin, you realize junior high and high school were hell, right? Yep. Would have been okay at that high school with no mirrors.
Right.
Probably would have spearheaded that movement.
Welcome, albinos.
When you have really bad skin, you have a really bad high school and junior high experience, and then
it hardens you.
That could make you into an evil dude.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're.
I've never heard that link before between skin condition and becoming evil. Yeah, I'll have to think about
that.
Yeah.
Put that in the back of your mind for your next
gotta
interview.
Got to keep that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Freddy Krueger, of course.
There you go.
Yeah, man, one of the ultimate.
Yeah. Burn victim.
Oh, and speaking of, you were talking about a scary gynecologist before.
Yeah.
My first gynecologist, Dr. Krueger.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was rough.
Also, his gloves.
Phantom of the Opera.
Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
It's grotesque.
The
1925 Universal.
Oh, it's coming back. Universal.
Coming back. In an action adventure with Tom Cruise.
They tried to make that comeback like 10 years ago.
Musically.
Emmy Rossum, yeah.
How crazy was Phantom of the Paradise as a movie?
Yeah. Brian De Palma.
Crazy Brian De Palma movie. I've talked to you
about
it before.
I'm aware of it, yeah. I haven't seen it.
It was a rock and roll musical that had like some hooky, poppy, catchy song.
There was a sweet
spot for those.
Paul Williams.
He did all the songs and was the Phantom. Was not the Phantom, but he ran Death Records.
He got his head caught in a record press, so he had bad skin.
Speaking of shellac.
It was a weird movie.
Yeah.
Do you think it ever would have come out had it not been for Tommy and Quadrophenia and that kind of thing?
There was a sweet spot, right?
Yeah.
This is probably after Tommy and before Quadrophenia. For some reason, I think Quadrophenia was after this.
Pre-Rocky Horror
was later in the 70s.
Rocky Horror probably helped this. I think this was... Well, now we got to figure it out. Rocky Horror maybe before.
I thought Rocky Horror was after.
I think it was after. I think Phantom of the Paradise was earlier.
Well, now we got to figure it out. It was close, but I remember Quadrophenia being after. I don't know. Figure it all out. Gary's working it out. I'll tell you about 1-800-DENTIST. Yeah. Also, those guys had bad teeth, too.
Oh, yeah.
They never have good teeth.
Snaggle tooth.
Yep. Yeah, that they forgot to mention that. It's important to have a dentist, and it's important to have nice teeth, and it's important to have dentists that's up on technology, like CEREC. That's right. CEREC. And it rhymes with Eric. Yeah. Dentists with CEREC can create a high-quality crown in just one office visit. No return appointments. No gooey trays or gagging on those trays you got to put into the print and keep in there. And you want some more suction? You can eat comfortably again, people. So find a dentist with CEREC and give him a call. 1-800-DENTIST today. Speak to an expert or book your appointment online at 1-800-DENTIST.com/Adam. That's 1-800-DENTIST.com/Adam. Over 9 million people already found an awesome dentist. 1-800-DENTIST/Adam. .com/Adam. Yeah, so Quadrophenia 73. Ugh, I thought.
Oh, it was much later than that.
Well, maybe. Look it up again. And then Phantom of the Paradise 74, and then Rocky Horror 75. Yeah. That felt right. Quadrophenia maybe got released.
The album or the movie? You're asking about the movie.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's the album.
Oh, that's the album. Oh, sorry.
But you were right. I mean, Quadrophenia was later.
I think I'm right about Phantom and Rocky Horror, too, because Phantom is 74 and Rocky's 75. Let's just call me right all the time. 79 for Quadrophenia.
Okay, never mind.
Right. But no, didn't you? You thought Rocky was before.
No, we both thought it was after, right? Yeah. We agreed.
We all agree.
But I thought you said it was easier to come out because of Rocky Horror.
I thought Rocky Horror came out in like 1980, so I know I thought that it came after. I mean, there's no mistaking what I thought.
And I postured, would Phantom of the Paradise, would that have ever come out had it not been for Tommy and Quadrophenia before it, assuming they came out before it? Did that pave the way for Phantom of the Paradise?
Somehow the Rocky Horror got piggybacked onto that thought. That's what I thought. All right.
A lot happening.
All right.
Well, the tourism board in Mexico joined forces with an advertising company in Chicago to develop a cloud that rains tequila. This scientific marvel, which uses humidifiers to vibrate tequila at an ultrasonic frequency to form a mist, was developed as part of an effort to convince German tourists to escape the rain of their home country and travel to sunny Mexico.
Vern Troyer's in rehab. Like, now they unveil the tequila cloud. Now they do this.
So how it works is visitors to this tequila cloud could literally hold a shot glass underneath the cloud and fill her up and take a shot.
Well, you know, I think it beats the flume. You know, I like the ice flume, but I like the tequila cloud better than the ice flume.
Spent a lot of time with the ice flume back in the college days.
Yeah,
a lot of time.
Yeah, I like this. So it'll a miniature little cloud.
It's got to be right.
It has to be. Yeah, it's sort of vapor, sort of looming in front of you.
Tangentially related. I was just having this conversation with a friend who was in Mexico. Mezcal, much better than tequila. Yes, we all agree on this.
I don't know.
Well, mezcal is tequila, isn't
it? Right, but it's its own thing. It's like a smoky version of. You can't mistake the two if you taste them, you know, back to back. One's smoky and amber, and one's tequila.
But it's mezcal tequila, right? Isn't it?
I think it's from they're both from the agave plant, but I think they're two different products.
Oh, they're different things. Mezcal, huh? Oh, I remember drinking. I thought mezcal had the worm on in it.
I believe it does.
Well, there's only one way to know.
But I think there are some tequilas that do too.
Oh.
We should probably bring it in.
Back in the day, mezcal had the worm in it and was what I thought was mezcal tequila.
I think it's like a bourbon whiskey kind of thing. You know what I mean? Well, there's different things, but the same family.
Come out before or after Phantom of the Paradise.
I'm reading that tequila is only made with blue agave, whereas mezcal can be made from over 30 different species of agave.
Oh, so smoky and wonderful.
They appear to be related.
Is it? Mezcal is mezcal. It's not a type of tequila.
That's correct.
It is mezcal. Well, it's going to get back into
Treat yourself.
Interesting. Done and done.
I smell a new Corolla drink.
All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
We're going out cock-teasing. Gina.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
There is a straight line between all these hot chicks and all these horrible songs, right?
Makes sense.
I think you're onto something.
Okay, because take a look at Janis Ian back in the day, and she wrote a great song about not getting asked on a date. When you see her, it all fits.
Is there room anymore for the ugly female pop star?
Oh,
I don't,
musician even?
I don't think so. And like Selena Gomez can't write that song because right. it's not in her.
She can't sing the blues.
Yeah, I mean, Janis Joplin.
No pain
for us. Stamps.com. Convenient, easy, reliable, Stamps.com. We use it here. We use it for all our shipping. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, package, or class of mail with your own computer and your own printer. Super easy. They'll even send a digital scale that'll automatically calculate the exact postage. And right now, you can enjoy Stamps.com with a special 4-week trial, plus postage, and the digital scale without any long-term commitments. So this is win-win. You get the scale, you get the postage, you don't get locked into any long-term commitments at Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com right now, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Adam. So you want the deal, use my name. Stamps.com, click the microphone, top of the homepage, type in Adam, that is Stamps.com. Enter Adam. You never go to the post office again. You don't have to. It is stamps.com. All right. Mick Garris, everybody. Postmortem every other Wednesday, podcast one. This Wednesday, Eli Roth, Menchi guy, Eli Roth. And you can go to the website, Mick Garris. That's G-A-R-R-I-S, interviews.com. Mick, this has been fun.
Well, thank you for having me here and making me comfortable.
I'm glad that you're comfortable. Number one still on the comedy charts on iTunes, me and Dennis Prager.
Number one.
No safe spaces, everyone. You can check that out at iTunes or Amazon or AdamCarolla.com, just $4.99. And check out the Spike Show tonight. It's a fun one. And say hi to Lynette over at Carolla Drinks, man. She loves hearing from you. Click through our Amazon button and bookmark us and all that stuff. Oh, and our new T-shirt, I Agree With Me. It's a limited time T-shirt. So you can go to AdamCarolla.com and look for that as well. All right. So until next time, this is Adam for Mick and Gina and Bald Sam. Mahalo. Dickas in, dickas out.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail if you like. 888-634-1744. Gina Grad is on the radio weekday mornings, 5 to 8 a.m. at 100.3 The Sound in L.A. Tickets and info on all the live podcasts, Mangria events, books, movies, and more. Go to AdamCarolla.com.